The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
It is indeed that time again. Welcome to Afternoons with Mike. I have in the studio today the Honorable Mayor of Oviedo, Megan Sladek, is here. Did I say your name right?
Pretty close. Megan Sladek. But I think in the old country, they say Sladek.
Okay. Sladek.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've got that straight now. Megan Sladek as the, I have been mayor for a couple of years. Prior to that, on the council and the city council of that area as well. And so you've got a little bit of not only political running for office experience, but actual on the job time as well.
Absolutely. I've been paying attention even before I got elected. I was a journalist for a while. So that was a fun segue.
Now, where were you working as a journalist?
Started out at University of Florida. It was a side job because I needed to put myself through law school.
Go Gators.
Go Gators. Absolutely. And then I got interested in trying to do it for Oviedo from Gainesville. So while I was in law school, I would scan in the records. At the time, the city did not have anything online. So I'd grab that stuff, scan it in, and put it on a website so anybody could read what was going on in the city. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of grew from there.
You know, so you're up in Gainesville during this time. And I wonder, did you ever write for the Alligator when you were up there?
I did not. I wrote for the UF Law Alumni newsletter.
Yeah, staying right with the JD work there.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then started my own little online newspaper.
Well, you know, I'm a Gator dad. I had three kids graduate from University of Florida, and we spent 17 years in Gainesville. So I love that city. And of course, we have a station where folks in Gainesville are listening to us right now on WTMN, and that is at 1430 AM and 96.3 FM. And we're just honored to be there and to have our program there and to have a Gator alumni there. That's awesome. So your years, tell me about your years at UF.
Well, they were kind of weird because at the time my husband was attending law school in Boston. I was for 2 years attending law school in Gainesville, and then they didn't quite overlap. So we were doing this triangle between Oviedo, where we had a home, Gainesville, and Boston.
How many years apart did you graduate?
1 year apart.
Oh, wow. That's pretty close.
It's pretty close, but we were married that whole 3 years, so.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. So, you know, this is just amazing to have two attorneys in the home. What field of attorney did you study? What law college did you spend your time in?
Land use. So to the extent that you can't call yourself a specialist unless you take some special tests. But that was my area of interest. And turns out that is just a beautiful intro to anything that has to do with local government and zoning. And
I would think so.
All the things that the mayor does.
Because of the fact that you have to know so many ordinances and just like you said, the use and the way land is property values and property rights, all of those things, really, they have a lot to do with operating a government.
Yeah, and the interaction between Florida's constitution and local government laws. A lot of people don't realize how tied up we are with our flexibility, with our lack of flexibility at the local level because of the state level constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Now, your husband, what kind of work did he do or does he do as an attorney?
He does real estate law as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So not going to be in a trial court for criminal activities or anything like that, but.
Absolutely not. Years have gone by without me going to court, and that's a beautiful thing.
Well, tell me a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Oviedo. I was born and raised right down the street from Oviedo High School.
You're the second person I've talked to today that is a native of the area.
Oh, it was great. So we grew up riding horses. The road wasn't paved past much past the high school, so we used to ride the horses up there, and when they put in tennis courts, That was a very hoity-toity thing at the time. And we'd take our horses and we'd jump over the tennis courts.
Oh, you know, the tennis nets. I'm not sure what those horse hooves would do to that tennis court, but
well, it's kind of squishy, so we thought it was okay. But I'm sure that it probably messed them up pretty good.
Oh, I would think I can't see that being good for the tennis bounce.
No,
I just can't see that happening at all. But now that you're admitting you did it, at least, so it's
the statute of limitations has well passed.
That's too funny. Horses, I mean, that is, there's just nothing, I think, for a child growing up that is more magical to have in your childhood than to be able to have horses or to ride and to take care of them. They're amazing animals.
Oh, they're wonderful. And it was such a normal thing at the time in Oviedo. When I was growing up, we only had maybe 4,000 people in Oviedo. Now there's about 43,000 people.
10 times more.
Yes. So now goodness. If you're riding a horse down the road, everybody looks at you like, what are you doing? But back then, you jump on the railroad tracks. This is before they were turned into trails, and you could just kind of go wherever. We could get all the way to where 417 now is. Now, that was a beautiful racetrack before they paved it.
Okay.
Nice.
I bet it was.
Dirt.
Yeah. And you could run those horses.
Yeah, just as they were building.
Mm-hmm. So were your parents believers?
Yes. My dad actually was the youth pastor at what is now Cross Life Church for a season. Before there was a professional full-time youth pastor.
Okay.
That was him. And my mom was the organist there.
And that used to be the Baptist church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, First Baptist Church of Oviedo.
Mm-hmm.
So my name's up in the steeple of the, it's called Legacy Hall now, but that was only built when I was in second grade. So
okay.
It's not that old.
Not that long ago.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So growing up, what was it like there to grow up in a Baptist church in an area that was 4,000 people in population and riding horses? Was that, were your days long as opposed to what it seems to me like? I was talking to Brittany today and feels like things are clicking by faster than I can believe it right now.
I felt like there was plenty of time in the world and it was easy growing up in Oviedo.
Isn't that great? What a beautiful area too. Really like old Florida back then, right?
Oh yeah. There are oak trees all over the campus of the church, and now it's doubled, maybe tripled in size. So a lot has changed with the church and with the community.
So what was it like then for those that, like yourself, lived there all these years, and then you see all of this development? Because, I mean, the road, Redbug Road, going on and into Oviedo and Mitchell Hammock and all of that, I mean, it changed drastically.
It is a little disconcerting at times. Mitchell Hammock Road used to not be paved at all. And Redbug Road, the target wasn't there. They rerouted the entire road to make way for 417. So it's been, your brain adjusts to all these new roads and things, but it's neat.
Now, 417, if people who are hearing us in Ocala and maybe in Gainesville, they wouldn't be aware that that is a pay road, a toll road, that runs on the eastern side going north and south, and it is a huge road. But boy, did it cut down time to get to the airport from that part of the state, didn't it?
It sure did. But everybody at the time said, what are you bringing this road here for? This is Oviedo. There's nothing here. And now, clearly, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things, it's so close to UCF.
Of course, it extends even northward from Oviedo. But it does create a lot of traffic in and around. And you're right. I mean, those intersections where it crosses over right there, Masters Academy grew out there. And they used to be in the east side of Orlando on 436. So they've gone out there. I mean, Reformed Theological Seminary, a beautiful campus out there.
That is beautiful out there.
I really love that. And I've been out there for classes, and it is just wonderful. And then, of course, you've got all of the other businesses that have opened up and changed and really, I mean, big stores out there, too. We've got a lot going on in Oviedo.
We do. We have over 104 restaurants now, which is just, growing up, that's unheard of. We had to go down to Castleberry to get something to eat after church.
Wow, that's something. And again, this is an area that was your fun place, an area where you grew up riding horses, and now it's a booming area, and there's a lot going on. When in your life did you find it in your heart to get into politics? When did that happen?
2016. And it was just, I woke up one day and thought, this is the day. I think I'm going to go to City Hall and pull my packet, because I had heard that there was going to be an open seat. And I've been interested in following it for years through the journalism side of it. And just went and did it. And God kind of laid it on my heart, said, you just go knock on the doors. Don't know if you're going to win or lose, but you just go knock on some doors and find out what the needs of the community are. And the rest is history. I knocked on every door in town.
Now, that's a that was saying a lot, even when you ran in there, because there, it had grown a lot by then. So you really literally did. You knocked on every door.
In 2016, I hit all 16 square miles of the city.
Oh, my goodness. And how long did it take you to do that?
It was about 10 weeks doing it as a full-time job.
Now, you know, we were talking about this, Megan. Not everybody that runs for office, they don't win. Not everybody. But you did on your first try. What do you attribute that to?
I think it was knocking on doors, because when I knocked on them, like I didn't start out thinking, you know, the goal is to win. My goal was to knock on doors and just find out what it was that, people, what's on people's minds. Where do they want to see Oviedo go? Does it match what I'd like to see? Because if it matches, well, great, then that'll work out. If it doesn't match, well, then, you know, if we have ourselves a disagreement to maybe I wouldn't be the best person to represent them. But a lot of things matched. And I found out a lot about needs and was able to match people up with, you know, I'm not the right person to solve every problem. But yeah, if somebody said, well, because I would show up at the door and I'd say, you know, is there anything I could help you with? And one person said, I can't reach my toenails. Can you trim my toenails? And I thought, well, I did ask her.
I'm sorry, I really don't know how to respond to that one.
You know, if you offer, you got to follow through.
I'm afraid to even ask a follow-up question about that right now.
But you know, I did not realize how hard it is to cut your toenails, or how hard toenails get. The older you get, I guess they get thicker. So, yeah.
Megan, I got to tell you, this is the first time that I've ever talked about this subject.
Got to have a first for everything, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm burning up. This is too great. Turn the air down, Brittany. It's too great. This is way too much fun. Megan, when people are seeing how sincere you are, when you're going knocking on doors and really asking them, that had to make a difference then. So that may well be what pushed you over the edge.
If you're willing to cut toenails,
come on now.
Well, it's kind of grown from there. People call with all kinds of different things that they need help with. And I do the best I can and keep trying to encourage people. And yesterday especially was interesting. A guy had called me a few weeks ago and he said, you know, I need your help to get the hospital to change its policy, because they're telling me that they will not let me do my surgery until I have somebody to pick me up. And I said, well, that's a good policy. Well, turns out he didn't have a car, so he couldn't drive himself there. And he also didn't have anybody to call. So you know, after we go back and forth a few times, and
you find out what his needs are.
Yeah, really, what is the problem? Is your problem the policy, or is it something else?
Yeah. And I think he wasn't trying to buck the system.
Well, he was trying to buck it because he didn't want to ask for help. So I just said, you know, look, you put me down and get over it as your pickup person. So yesterday I picked him up, he insisted he ride his bike. So he rode his bike to go get surgery yesterday. And then I put his bike in the car, we took him home, and he's good.
Wow. You know, I had eye surgery earlier this year, and I could have, my wife said, I told her, don't bother with it. I'll drive. Oh my goodness. That was a mistake. We all need help. Yeah,
we all do need help, and we need to be able to acknowledge when we need help. We're supposed to be in community. I really feel like that's why God put us on this planet, was to learn how to be with each other, how to grow relationships, and when we finally figure it all out, well, not figure it all out, but you know, figure it out well enough, you know, maybe our time here is done.
Well, that's very interesting to realize that you get to be a part of people's lives as mayor in ways that I think a lot of us would not think about, but that is really hearing and listening and doing what you need to do in order to serve the people of your community. And I'm betting that back when you were in college at UF, you had no idea that that was part of the job description.
No,
of a mayor.
I thought I was going to just beat up politicians as a journalist for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became one. And now I get bopped in the chin every now and then. As I should.
That's funny. Now, when you started off in council, did you have your eyes on the mayor race from the beginning?
I did not. That's actually a really strange story. So I was just going to run for re-election. I filed, and right away, somebody else filed. And all of these doors started slamming in my face for running for re-election. I thought, you know, this is just, I couldn't figure out what was going on. I said, well, you know, prayed. God, if you would like me to do something else, like, please keep on slamming doors so I know that this is going to be a hard path, and then show me what path would be easier. And somebody said, you should run for mayor. I thought, oh, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Then all these doors started to open. And so I filed paperwork for that, and people all of these people started to rally around and seemed supportive of it. And at the time, I had filed to run against the incumbent who'd been there for almost a decade. Almost 20 years, if you count his time
so
on
you,
council.
So you ran for mayor against an incumbent.
Well, I started out doing it. And this is the part that gets even wilder. So I was, you know, he hadn't filed. I was just doing my thing. And when I was out of town, God arranged it perfectly. I was not in town. He had an encounter that involved the police, and it made it very difficult for him to file for re-election. So he ended up not even running.
Mm-hmm.
And by then, I'd already knocked on a bunch of doors, and everything just kind of kept falling into place.
Mm-hmm. Well, things like that happen, and when you were at the right place at the right time, then. And the will of the Lord is done in your life. I love that analogy, though, that you gave about doors closing and doors opening. God does that. He does.
Yeah, if you pay attention, because at first I did not notice all these doors slamming in my face, and I was just going to do my thing, and here I go. You know, I was like, you know, I don't want to be anything besides a council person.
Mm-hmm.
And until God made it real, real sparkling clear.
That's right.
I kept on going.
Well, my guest today is Megan Sladek, and she's the mayor of Oviedo. And we're going to be back with her coming up in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Having a fun time today with Megan Sladek. She is the mayor of Oviedo. And we've already talked about things in segment one that have never been talked about on my program before. So if you missed it, you're going to have to listen back for the podcast. It's going to be fun and you'll enjoy it. But it is really seriously great to have Megan here. And hearing the story of a gator who was and is an attorney. I mean, you've got you're a member of the bar and all of that. But I don't know if you've ever actually practiced with it. Did you jump right into politics or did you practice law for a while?
Well, about halfway through law school, my dad passed away. So everybody at the office voted. He was a real estate broker. Everybody at the office voted to wait until I could come and see if I even wanted to try this out before we decided what to do. So I went that summer and decided I wanted to go into real estate. So they waited a whole nother year for me to get out of law school, did my broker exam, passed the bar. And since then, I've been doing a hybrid.
Wow.
Ever since.
Both of them, doing both the real estate and being an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that really works well to be an attorney in real estate. That's not a bad gig either.
It's very handy. I understand everything that's presented at city council.
Yeah, because the homes that I bought, almost every one of them, at some point in time, there was some question that needed an opinion from an attorney. That just happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it happens a lot more than what people realize who haven't bought it. That many homes, but I think we bought about five or six or something like that in my lifetime. And so, yeah, that's a big advantage to have a handle on the law, if you will, and know what's going on and be able to follow through with your own study. And that works out wonderfully. You know, this whole thing about being a believer in politics, there are many people, and I'm sure you're joked about it all the time, but there are many people who wonder if that is the place for a believer, a place for a Christian to be in politics. And in my mind, those are the best people to have in representing us. So what's that like for you?
Well, you have to remember whose you are the whole time. And at times it is a little bit challenging because there's people who, you know, they may be a different faith or have no faith at all and want you to completely, you know, segregate your beliefs from whatever it is you're doing. And as I read the Constitution, it's fine to bring your beliefs to the government. It is not fine for the government to impose its beliefs on anybody else.
Which was part, that's the right understanding of separation of church and state. It was not to separate America from God.
Absolutely. So I bring my faith without throwing anybody's face, but you know, that kind of governs everything. It's the baseline by which everything is done on my end.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about when you were running for mayor, you've had those doors both shut and then open for you, and you saw the way clear. But then there's a more like a personal thing that was going on in your life. You and your husband find you're expecting.
Yes. So we've got right now a 10th grader and a 7th grader. So 2 years ago when I was first running for mayor, they were 2 years younger. We thought we were done with kids. So we'd packed up everything, ready to run for mayor. We'd had the kickoff party. And 2 weeks later, discovered that a baby was on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, y'all know what I'm going to do. We're going to have that baby. That's how you do with babies. So the whole time, it was very, very strange because I got to experience what fat people are treated like because I never said that I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm. So they just thought you were gaining weight?
I was getting bigger
weight?
And bigger and bigger. I gained like 50 pounds and I kept knocking and walking on doors. And at some point it became so obvious that somebody said, you know, you just can't. Because you're riding a bike, pregnant, going to people's doors, and you look ridiculous. You look like you're going to fall.
Oh, my goodness. And so the due date. Tell us the due date.
So the due date was the election day. Like, we could not have planned. God did that. There's no way we could have planned that. So that was its own challenge in the scenario. And then as we got closer to election time, in August, my grandmother, who had moved to Oviedo to live with my mom, because she was having some health issues, she passed away.
Mm.
So I thought, man, that is not ideal timing. 1 month later, out of the blue, on her birthday, my mom went to get a heart cath. They told her everything's fine. And as she was getting up, that was it for her.
No way.
Honest to goodness. So by the end, God made sure that I was so emotionally beat down for the last probably 2.5 months of this election that I knew by the time I got to the finish line that I was not there on my own power, not one little bit.
Oh, my goodness. Those are two major emotional hits on you, right?
That was pretty intense. And different people just stepped up to help make things happen that needed to. Because the only thing all candidates have the same is time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have all this time to just stop and grieve, but I needed to. So a lot of people stepped up to allow me to do the things I needed to do. And I showed up and things worked out. And I thought, you know, that God, you made sure that I did not get an ego out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of a rough way to do it. But if people have to, it's nothing sad about going to heaven.
Nothing sad about that.
But both my grandmother and my mom, they're rejoicing now. My dad passed away about 18 years ago. So it's all right.
It's not hard on those who go to heaven. It's hard on the rest of us that are left behind.
Especially when you're not expecting it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've heard this before of people having a medical procedure like a heart cath. And that just sets off a trigger of things.
And something just, boop, was that.
Wow. I'm very sorry about that, but it is a definite everyday thing that people are losing loved ones, and we're, you know, at the age where I am now, it's becoming more and more apparent with people's parents, and that's a tough thing. It's a tough time for a lot of folks, but you've brought your faith into the reality of your living. And let me ask you a question about your faith. You mentioned that you grew up in that Baptist church, which is now Cross Life. Tell us a little bit about what it was like when you crossed that point of just attending a church as a child to where a relationship with Jesus being a meaningful thing in your life.
was in middle school. And I remember, you know, thinking, you know, I wish somebody would tell me a little more specifically, like, what does it take to truly know that you are a child of God?
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the first time you get to go to real youth group is the last day of school in sixth mm-hmm. grade. And that was the day. And I was like, you know, I've been waiting. All the stage had been set. My parents had, you know, just got, you know, explained everything, but they've never said, you know, here's some specific steps, you know, to confess that you can't do it on your own, believe, and you know, just get all the way there. So yeah, that was what it was.
Wow. In sixth grade. That's great. Mm. And to have that as something that you grow up with is such a help. I just love it when I hear people say, I came to the Lord in middle school or even earlier. Some people come to know the Lord earlier, and it's very clear it was the real deal.
And it's so nice to have colleagues. Both of my older kids, when they came to know the Lord, they were a little bit younger than me. And I always say, are you sure? We asked them so many questions, and mm-hmm. I made sure, and my husband too, we made sure to let them know, you know, yeah, how do you know that you're whose you are mm-hmm. and where you're going if something should happen to you? And they did. So I was glad that we were able to help them understand a little sooner.
That's awesome. Megan, as a mayor of a community, and like all communities right now, they've faced some difficult times the last 2 years. 2020 was a difficult year for anyone. Can't imagine what it would be like to try to be a mayor of a city, of a community during a COVID pandemic like what we've gone through. And we thought we were done. We thought 2021, it was going to be off and sailing. And now things are happening the way they are. What do you see happening with this thing in your community?
People are finally starting to make an effort to get along. And I don't think people were not trying to get along before, but everybody's gotten to a point where they accept, you know, there are people who are going to get vaccinated and people who are not going to get vaccinated. And all we can do is just love. So you can't see this on the radio, but love Oviedo. Started to just encourage people to love Oviedo.
It's like a model that you have.
So that's my logo mm-hmm. for this season for the campaign. The signs look like this. They don't even have my name because the city does not need to know my name right now. They need to love each other. And Galatians 6:10 says, you know, always do good. Love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we just need to keep remembering, do good to each other. Be kind to each other.
Especially
love.
To those that are of the household of faith.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thought. It's a great verse. I love Paul's writing to the Galatians all the way through. It's a wonderful book to study about relationships and about living for the kingdom of God. What do you see happening in Oviedo right now?
With development or
anything? What is the news going on right now in Oviedo?
So the news is we cannot stop another 4,500 homes from being built. And we can't stop anything from being clear cut. So we have to find a way to live with that reality, to respect those property rights and to move forward as a community without being upset at all of the people in elected office and all of the people who you work at City Hall and help facilitate this development. Because the law is the law. So there's this interesting balance happening as we transition because we're a city. We're an urban city.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people feel like we're not yet. And this is the tipping point where we all just get together and say, look, guys, we're a city.
Now, there are some urban communities like bedroom communities, like to a bigger community of Orlando, like what Oviedo is. And yet you're right. You have your own city there, your own government. There's many who would propose a kind of almost like a mentality of no growth and stop all development.
It's not feasible because of what the state level constitution says and other state laws. You simply cannot stop it. So as I'm knocking on doors this time, I'm just telling people straight up and say, look, I would love to stop growth too. But the reality is 4,500 more homes are coming. Let's work together to find out a way for those to come and for it to be a benefit to those of us who are already here.
Now, knowing that the big spaces that are out there in all of that part of the county, It's not like there's no space for that many more houses to come in. What is the big reason? Is it just concerned about traffic, or is it concern about...
It's a concern about traffic. It's a concern about riffraff moving in. A lot of people are concerned that it will shift the level of conservatism and the politics of the area. And I have noticed that walking door to door, depending on the style of housing, you shift from, you know, more liberal to more conservative.
Would you say that the concern is to lose the conservative? Is that what the suggestion would be?
That does seem to be the main concern.
Mm-hmm.
In cities where there are more apartments, there do seem to be more liberal ideas.
So the growth that's going in would not be single family homes, would be more apartments or planned developments?
That does seem to be the trend. Mm-hmm. So what is left is to do urban infill in already developed areas. So the Oviedo Mall has a lot of capacity to have apartments. And there are a couple of apartment projects that are already fully approved that have not been built. So there's a lot of apartments that, you know, predate even my coming back as the mayor. So there's going to be more multifamily housing.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you see the whole makeup of the economic aspect of Oviedo? There's not a lot of development for big industry there. What is the biggest economic base? Is it just the...
Publix is one of our biggest employers. Mm-hmm. Siemens, just outside city limits, is a very big employer. They do a lot of engineering for anybody who may be listening from out of the area. And then some of the restaurants, I want to say Ale House is one of the larger restaurants, mm-hmm. as far as employment goes. But we do not have a lot of high paying jobs that are in city limits. So that's something that I've been working real hard with the city manager to try to figure out, you know, how do we change the laws to make it easier for people to choose to come to Oviedo. So micro manufacturing is a growing industry. And we are next meeting, we're going to go ahead and change our law to make it so you're allowed to come to Oviedo and do that and not have to have industrial zoning.
Well, you have a bunch of parks out there as well. Beautiful area. It's still a lot of wide open spaces.
Well, we have a lot of city-owned land that is in permanent that the people expect to be in permanent conservation. I keep trying to get my colleagues to actually put it into permanent conservation, and so far that has not been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those parks that really people expect to stay conserved is the golf course. It's about 300 acres.
Mm. Well, and, there you go. Yeah, there's a lot of golf courses in the Seminole County area that have kind of flipped and turned into parks, not a golf course anymore.
This one so far is standing on its own two legs as a golf course. After a very significant influx of money from the public sector, I did vote against that. I don't think it's the role of government to run golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I was outvoted. Now it's a break-even affair, so I've seen no reason to ditch it at this point because now it's turning a profit.
So you're in another election cycle right now, and the election will take place this November?
Yes, this November.
And you're not having to face the same things this time physically, so that's a good thing, and you're out there, and you're knocking on doors.
Knocking on doors again.
Wow. Well, we wish you the best. Really, thank you for coming in. It's really great to know that we have leaders, civic leaders, mayors of communities that are people of faith, people who put their faith to practice, and really let that be a guiding beacon in their decisions. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's great to have you, Megan Sladek, the Oviedo mayor, here with us today. And we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Happy to be on the line today with Libby Sanderson. Libby is the executive director of the Indian River Youth for Christ chapter, and it's really great to have you with us today, Libby. Welcome.
Mike, thanks so much. It's good to be here.
Now, you've been with this organization. Tell us a little bit about the background of your being with Youth for Christ, and then we'll talk about Youth for Christ a little bit more generally speaking. But how long have you been with them?
For a total of 8 years, but I am full-time now for 4 years.
All right. And always in this particular area, did you ever work with them in any other part of the country?
No, I had never even heard about Youth for Christ until I moved here into the Florida area.
Years ago, I used to work with a guy named George Dooms. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's up in Evansville, Indiana. And back in the 80s, I had a band and I was on the radio up there and we traveled around and we regularly did that that chapter for Youth for Christ up there. We did concerts for them. Oh my goodness, we had some really great times up there.
That sounds like Youth for Christ. There's a big presence in the Northeast of Youth for Christ chapters.
Yeah, they did a great job and were very active. And I know that you're very active in the Indian River area as well. And, you know, you've got this ministry going not only for high schoolers, but that's something that makes your ministry unique from some other campus-type ministries in that you deal with a lot of the middle schools as well. So tell us a little bit about what it's been like this summer for you.
Yes, it's been amazing. This past summer, we actually were able to put together a middle school camp for a lot of the kids that attend our yearly program called Campus Life. And so we love doing camps because it's just taking them out of their normal environment, removing distractions and the stresses of their everyday lives, and just really loving them well, all while pointing them to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Now, the kids you're working with, they're across the board. Some of them probably have some church experience, but I'm betting that a good number of them might never have gone to a church before.
Yeah, that's our target audience. So we typically see about 60 to 70% of our kids that attend our programs are not associated with a church and aren't really believers in any sense.
Now, most of our audience obviously would be believers, and I think it's really kind of difficult for a lot of people in America to imagine, especially those of us that are a little bit older, it's hard to imagine that kids could or do grow up without any knowledge of the Bible, without any, let's say, experience of hearing the name of Jesus. But the truth is, there are many kids today going to schools, public schools, who really have zero experience in the Lord. Isn't that the way it is?
Absolutely, Mike. It would shock a lot of the older generations to see just how little they really understand about Christianity and about who Jesus is.
Now, when you take a kid, when you're going into one of these schools, that in itself is kind of amazing, I think, in this day and age, that you have the doors open. So that means that you've got to be recognized as an official club then in the school.
Yes, there are some guidelines that we have to follow. We have to have a teacher sponsor who is the advocate for us, the club leader in a lot of senses on the campus. We have to make sure that students are signing off, petitioning for us to be there. And then we also can't pray with them on campus. We are not allowed to lead prayer.
Well, what kind of discussions without that do you guys have, or what goes on like that?
So because we are tailored for lost kids, all our clubs, all our after-school programs are topic-based. So we talk about anything, gossip, social media, friendships, parent relationships, all these kind of things that affect their lives. And then we open up discussions. So each kid has a small group leader. They go into their small groups. The leader ask them questions to help them think deeper about these topics in their lives and help them just even put words to things. And then from there, at the very end, we share our perspective, which is the Christian perspective.
Now, it's got to be hard for, I'm trying to put my own mind and mindset into maybe some of our listeners who are hearing and maybe for the first time realizing that those kinds of limitations are placed on ministries like Youth for Christ, that would say you can't even pray with a student. It's hard to believe that kind of limitation is in our country, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, there are absolutely, I mean, so leaders, us as adults, we're not allowed to solicit prayer with the students. But if a student were to stand up and say, like, I just really, can someone pray for me, or I need prayer right now, then we can absolutely pray with them.
Okay, so you are able to join in a prayer. You just can't initiate that kind of a thing.
And actually tomorrow is See You at the Polls. So there's going to be all throughout our nation, people will be praying on public school campuses.
Well, tell us a little bit about the general, I guess you could say the general makeup of what your year looks like with Youth for Christ.
So we kick off our clubs 2 weeks after school starts. And from there, we build new relationships with kids. And again, this is all relational evangelism. It's not everyone get together, we're going to share the gospel right now and raise your hand if you want to respond to it. So we really play the long game. So throughout the school year, we're meeting with kids. It's campus life, which is an after school club, but it's also building times, movie nights, dodgeball tournaments, things like that, that get them really engaged and get them immersed in healthy culture and healthy community. And so throughout the year, we're doing those, that weekly club. We have small groups that meet as we form these relationships. Kids are getting plugged into their leaders' churches and things like that. So throughout the year, we start again 2 weeks after school, and then we just continue on building those relationships. And in the summer months, we go to YFC camp.
Tell us about that.
Oh my gosh, the camp is amazing. It's a really great experience, especially after a leader has been walking alongside a student for the whole school year, and then they get to go to camp together where the gospel is really broken down in a very meaningful and clear way. For these lost kids, they really don't understand what it is to respond to the gospel, and sometimes they don't really even know what that decision means. And so at camp, there's a lot more weight that's put to it. And there's themes, every day follows a theme that really just slowly breaks down the gospel, and they're being loved just so well.
Now, I'm guessing that when you're at camp, you don't have the same kinds of limitations as you would have on campus.
Absolutely not. And one of the great things about camp is that we take their phones away from them.
Oh, I think that's a wise thing to do.
It is the biggest. It's such a distraction, and it's a really big deal. Some kids don't come to camp because they know that their phone will be taken from them.
Yeah.
But the ones that do, they sign on for it, and their lives are just, they can breathe. There's margin. There's space for them to just have conversations and dive deeper with people.
There's no doubt about it. Wouldn't you agree with this? There's no doubt about it that these kids, in a similar way to what drugs do to a body, these kids are addicted to screen time.
Absolutely. Their new nickname, this new generation's nickname, is the screeners, because they literally haven't had a day without a screen being in their life.
Wow.
No day of their life. Because, I mean, if you think back to when you and I, the computers like weren't around when we were kids. That wasn't a thing. We didn't have them in our homes. And so, but these kids are surrounded by them. So it's really hard because they are kind of socially handicapped in a lot of ways because of what our screens are doing to them.
I think they are. And I think they don't realize, and I don't think anybody realizes really the impact, the long-term impact that all this is going to have. But we do know there are stats that are very sad that suicide rates are higher in this generation than ever before. And obviously the just the inability that a lot of these kids have to really kind of interact one with another. It's just building in this seclusion that is so dangerous.
And it's not just that. It's that if I'm sitting with people and having a conversation, if there's conversation lulls, I'll go to my phone instead of pressing deeper and engaging more. Because think about how Jesus lived. He continuously asked people questions. And when they a question, he would ask a question back to them. That doesn't happen now. One, the phones buzz or light up, and so it's distracting. And two, if there's, you know, just even any lull, a student will turn to their phone and just check it to see what's going on. And that's just not the way we were designed to be in relationship. And so we try to point to Jesus in those ways. And we have phone baskets and things that we ask them. If you're going to be here, like for a small group or for an appointment, we'll just leave your phone in your backpack or put it in the basket. And that works out pretty well for us. I mean, you always have those. I mean, again, we're dealing with lost kids, and so boundaries isn't necessarily always a thing. But we it typically works because we're coming to them and we're loving them well. Mm-hmm. And so explain why we don't want them to be on their phones. It's because I want to know you more, not a punishment,
I'm sure that these kids, when they have that broken away from them, even for a little bit, it probably does ease up a little bit in their abilities to then share what's really going on in their hearts.
Yes, exactly. And so, but that space isn't really created in our culture very naturally anymore. Mm-hmm. We're always just so busy. We go, go, go. And so to just stop and to pause and to ask a 14-year-old, what are three things in your life you need to be doing more of and three things you need to be doing less of? That they don't, we don't, where do we do that? Where do we help them evaluate? And so that's part of what Youth for Christ exists to do, help them think deeper.
That's wonderful. Now, in the time we have remaining, I've got another question. How are the parents of these kids that really have not really heard anything about the Lord? How do the parents then respond to you? What kind of feedback do you get from them?
Typically, it's positive. We have had a couple experiences where the parents are questioning, like, why are you spending so much time with our kids? But typically, it's really positive. And we really do our best to know the names and the faces of the parents that are involved. But again, that's really tough because a lot of these lost kids, their parents work two jobs or their parents are in and out of the picture in a lot of different ways, which is, you know, not how God designed our families to function, but we're there and we press in when we can with who, what parents are engaged and involved.
Oh, I tell you, it sounds like a very exciting outreach and a much needed one as well. How can people locally partner with you guys?
So locally, we have direct ministry opportunities. So it's relational evangelism. We have to have leaders to do the relational evangelism. So basically, there's positions open for direct ministry volunteers who really get discipleship and understand how to walk alongside someone in pointing them to Jesus. And so those are the opportunities for those who are in and around Indian River County. And then we also have indirect support teams, people who put together our events and help us do our fundraising and different committees that we have, even just envelope stuffing, even for our big mailing campaigns.
Mm. Sounds like it's a busy job over there. We've got 1 minute left. Tell us a little bit about how this whole COVID mess has really impacted your work.
You know what? For a while, it was a little tough. We felt like we were just, you know, spinning our wheels, but we actually have had so many people come alongside us and different buildings and partnerships open up that we have been able to carry out ministry even when it was, you know, back in, you know, June, July of 2020. We did some Zoom calls, but we also opened up different small groups and doing appointments as people were trying to minimize those they were around. We just brought the numbers down to a smaller size.
Hmm. Our signal covers into Volusia County and on toward your county as well. Tell us how people can get in touch with you. What's the website?
www.yfcirc.com.
Libby Sanderson, thank you for being with us today and joining us on The Shepherd. It's been great to have you.
Thanks so much, Mike.
And friends, thanks for being with us as well. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd.